And welcome back to Season 5 of the Watch Pitch podcast and YouTube channel program, with a special focus on the thaw from the impacts of COVID on entrepreneurs, startups, and investors. For our episodes 2 and 3 for Season 5, we are in Europe, across the pond as they say, to visit with two co-founders who competed and were finishers in this year's virtual Knowledge Graph conference. Their companies depend on knowledge graphs for their business solutions. Just like when you say, "Hey Siri, what's the weather in London like today?" Or, "Alexa, play me some jazz." Knowledge graphs are being accessed to give you those results. AI, or artificial intelligence, is increasingly harder to avoid when building relevant business opportunities for our future. The runner-up at the Knowledge Graph Conference pitch competition, Sabrina Vitasari, co-founder of the Nusa Santara company, joins us from southern Portugal, but based out of Lisbon, to share how her company is using AI and knowledge graphs to help solve one of the biggest issues of our time, our waste, and moving solutions and connecting those solutions globally to local best practices. An important and future-defining effort for our entire planet. This is an inspired conversation that takes us to Finland, British Columbia, Belize, Indonesia, with lots to learn and discover together. Let's get started. So, Watch Pitch podcast listeners and YouTube channel viewers, we're taking it off. COVID has turned a page for a lot of us. And I also want to acknowledge that there's a lot of places in the world that are suffering hugely by this pandemic. So we're not on the other side of it. But there has been a thaw. And this is the theme of Season 5 of the Watch Pitch podcast and YouTube channel. At the moment, I want to introduce you to Sabrina Vitasari. She is the founder of Nusa Santara. Yes?
Yes.
And
you did good with the name of Vitasari and Santara, so well done.
I did. Good. Excellent. Well, I'm so excited about this because we just met 2 weeks ago during a Knowledge Graph conference pitch competition. I was one of the judges, and we had another guest earlier today. You might see this out of sequence, but there was a winner for that pitch competition, and Sabrina was the runner-up. And it was a close and difficult decision for the judges as we were debating the number of startups that were pitching at the Knowledge Graph Conference. A difficult decision, but Sabrina, honestly, I think one of the things that elevated your business and your pitch as it related to the Knowledge Graph Conference was the social component of this and the important work that you're doing with this company in the world that has to get solved. These are problems that, you know, I think can be looked at through the lens of market factors, but this is an environmental, this is a values piece. This is something that from an ethics point of view really spoke to all of us, and we wanted to be sure that that was a part of the conversation, because it's something that as a planet, we need to be having this conversation, and coming up with innovative ways to solve this is important to all of us. And so I just want to honor that out loud and let you know that behind the curtain, as we were debating how to make our decision, this piece of the values that were sort of fundamental to each one of these startups that were pitching us was equally important to all of us. And I think you really rose in that particular category because of the importance of the work you're doing. So congratulations. And I'm wondering if you could just introduce yourself as a founder and talk a little bit about your company, and then we'll get into some more details, particularly as it relates to COVID, but then also just as a founder with a very interesting team, I might add.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really appreciate you recognizing that. I think there's something about actually the COVID time that did make people more aware of both socially and environmental challenges. There was something about kind of like having to sit and reflect that, was in some ways good for our business because it just brought things to the awareness and the collective awareness, and that's always very powerful. But yes, yeah, so you already introduced me. I am Sabrina Vidasari, and I'm the co-founder of Nusa Centauri. And Nusa Centauri, for about the past decade, has been developing circular waste solutions for both online and offline. And our team has over a decade's experience in the circular economy. But really, we kind of came together to tackle it from different perspectives, bringing different backgrounds to it. But the one goal really is it's to change the collective mentality that waste is not a material, but it is a mindset. And in doing so, we can mine the waste of today to actually build a cleaner tomorrow, but also solve some of these other big wicked problems that we have, because we don't only have a waste problem. We also have a resource scarcity problem. And if we combine these two wicked problems together, we actually have an even more wicked solution. What we were presenting at the Knowledge Graph conference is our product NewCycle. And that's the data-driven digital platform. It's the part that really integrates semantic AI. And what we're trying to do with that, or what we've been doing with this, is creating a universal waste offset model. And with NewCycle, any individual company or community is able to take responsibility for their waste impact through a simple and transparent offset service. And for the user, it's quite simple, but it's actually the semantic AI that allows us, and well, knowledge graphs in particular, that allows us to take such a complex issue as the global waste management problem and turn it into a simple solution and product for the end user. And our customers.
And it looks like you're already doing this. Is it in Indonesia that you have one of your initial clients?
Yeah, so we have the two sides. We have our the waste offset, and then the way that we actually offset, we can guarantee that the waste is being offset, is through our network of waste conversion partners. And the waste conversion partners, they're the one that can turn a specific type of waste stream into a value stream or into a revenue stream even. And those projects primarily now are based in Southeast Asia. But what gets really exciting is when these different conversion partners come together, and this is again what the semantic web has allowed us to do, is to combine the power of what these conversion partners are doing on their own and basically bring them together to work in a symbiotic way that actually adds sometimes exponentially more value. And that's the super exciting part.
So walk us through a typical scenario, or the scenario that brought this particular partnership together.
So I guess what we were designing, looking to bring, first of all, waste to energy. That was kind of our first goal, was how to deal with problematic plastics. And when we realized that the problem with the waste management crisis is that, like, especially municipal solid waste, it never comes in one form. There's not just like one stream and one material. So it actually requires more than one type of technology in order to process the waste and create a truly zero waste system. And that's what we're trying to do, is turn the waste streams into revenue streams in order to provide infrastructure that will actually function. Because in a lot of parts of the world where we're operating, you have to have an economic incentive in order to tackle the waste crisis or to tackle the waste issues. You can't just do it through tax dollars. There isn't enough there. So you have to provide an economic incentive. And we realized that in order to do this, we had to combine more than one type of technology together. So for example, pyrolysis, which turns waste, problematic plastics into fuel, would actually need to be combined with something that can deal with a different type of plastic stream, like PET, in which we turn it into building materials through [S2] All right. [S1] An extrusion technology. But then we also have to deal with the organic waste. So then we needed to bring in insect flies. And so these are all different companies doing different part, but together they create these beautiful, what we call the new cycle hubs, where they're creating like multiple value streams out of these new ways. And it's creating new jobs in the communities. And it's also just really fundamentally changing the mindset that waste isn't waste.
Mm. And I noticed also during your pitch, you talked about the relationship that you had, which might have been sort of the beginnings of the company with the Norwegian government. And I don't know how that played in, but it seems like that was one of your first customers. Was that how that worked?
Ah, sorry, the Finnish government, but the Nordics.
Oh, the Finnish government. Yes.
Norway also does it.
Okay.
But yeah, so in general, Finland has a very, very supportive infrastructure for for startups, but especially in the clean tech space. And the reason why they are particularly fond of our technology is because Finland's actually, it's like Santa's workshop of clean tech. But they invent all of these amazing things that are solving all the world's problems. What they're great at doing is engineering, systems design, and invention. What they're not super hot at is marketing and internationalization and scaling. So what, I'm half Canadian and half Finnish, by the way, so that's why I have the outgoing nature of
North
American.
That's why you have that bridge. Got it. Yeah, no, that's great.
Yes.
Nice.
And so it was to bring a lot of these Finnish solutions to markets where they would have a greater impact than in Finland. Finland's already super clean. We dealt with our waste management crisis ages ago. And now, similar to Sweden, they actually have to import waste in order to feed some of the systems that they have.
Wow. Huh.
Yeah.
Who knew?
So
go ahead.
No, I was going to say it was kind of that in this which inspired us. And to kind of answer your first question, we were able to apply for government grants. And I mean, they have a lot of incentives ranging from grants to equity investments to zero interest loans if you are in the developing the different types of technology, and especially if you're bringing developing technology, which can then bring other types of Finnish technology abroad. And it also helps because whenever you're dealing with waste in infrastructure, in almost every country, it will be some form of public-private partnership. So to have the governmental support from one country, it makes it so much easier to bridge into the when working with governments of other nations.
Well, an interesting piece with regards to any kind of policy commitment to that path of innovation coming from the government is that governments they don't have a great reputation for making very fast decisions. As opposed to a startup. As opposed to a startup or, you know, a market-driven business that isn't really having to go through a lot of decision makers. And I'm curious, is it the nature of the problem that's creating this sort of innovation partnership with governments that you're seeing that just is making more sense to everybody because this is a critical issue and needs to be addressed? Or is it just the nature of perhaps just the Finnish government? I don't know.
Well, I think that it's a bit of both. Finland is very, like, there's certain areas of the Finnish policy and just kind of like the Finnish societal structure, which is, well, it's quite socialist, first of all. Like, mm-hmm. You pay high taxes, but there's like a lot of opportunities. Some people, like, you can take a 1-year sabbatical and get paid to take a 1-year sabbatical to find something to develop yourself in some kind of way. So Finland has, and you know, the healthcare and the education. From a business point of view, they have these, incentives for companies. I think it's also when in terms of dealing with certain sectors, like whether it's energy or it's infrastructure or it's resources, there is always going to be a relationship with the government. And I think that the nature of the problem, I think it's just, yeah, you could say it's the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
That,
I get it. Yeah.
I think it's also because at a certain level, these types of problems can only be funded by governance, like governments and intergovernmental things.
Right.
And it's actually why we chose Indonesia as a location to start, is because we, in our research and our work for the past many years, we realized that part of the solution is the centralization. Part of the problem is the centralization, and the solution is decentralization in the infrastructure. Because when you, especially in terms of waste management, when you overly centralize waste management, it becomes, you end up spending so much money collecting waste that like the resources that are going into getting to the waste from all around and bringing it to one area starts shooting holes in your boat in terms of the economics of the end product that you can produce. And this is, again, where the knowledge graphs and building an ontology is actually helping us solve this problem. Because it's not, the interesting thing about waste management is it's so tied into what is being produced by the local community and what are the resource and material demands of that local community. So what are the price of resources, price of oil, price of building materials, price of protein? What is the industries that are there? What is in demand? Which will define the economic values of the products that you're creating? Because in Indonesia, the price of diesel can vary region to region, or the price of electricity can vary region to region, because, you know, out in Papua, it has to go by boat, and what it costs to get there is... So if you're in Java, where the price of diesel is low, it might not make sense to be turning your waste into fuel.
Right.
If you're out in Papua, where the price of waste is like, or the price of diesel is five times higher, the economics of your waste to value, or your waste to energy or waste to fuel project is that much more. So it's these kinds of questions that we're developing into our knowledge graph and our semantic, what we're calling mycelium, based on the mycelium. So having this kind of interconnected web.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's good.
It's basically something that can help us answer these questions and answer them very quickly, and then answer them based on big data inputs. And I'm not just talking about the data that we collect, but actually starting to look at the World Bank database on waste, like these bigger sets, looking at satellite data where we can understand where is the waste right now, what type of technology do we build where, based on what are the demands, what is the local economy of that location.
So is a lot of your work then, it seems like it's very data driven and search oriented. Is there any engagement with the technology of those conversions, or are you mainly a sort of a repository for the information that then can empower the people and the marketplace to meet those needs in that conversion process from waste to energy?
It goes on two sides. So in some cases, like we will first, when we look at the technology. We always vet it. We have to understand, it's like, does this technology have a potential to be economically viable at some point?
I see.
And that's like, that's the first thing. So we do have a very deep and kind of rich assessment process with our conversion partners. But part of the value that we offer them when they partner with us is we help them understand where should they build their technology to have the best value? What other technologies can they partner with to increase the scope of their solution? So it's like what I was telling you before about this symbiotic relationship. This technology needs PET. This one needs HDPE. Sorry if I'm getting too plastic techie with you.
Yeah, no, but I think there are terms that a lot of us understand at this point.
And this... and like what how much more value will it create? And mm-hmm. these are the ones, okay, this is where there is like government subsidies for it. And it also helps to scale. It helps be like, this is where you should build your technology first. And then this is where you can kind of go out in the future. Because that's the idea, is that each site, where the offset comes in and why we design the offset. So this ability to put basically a price on every product. I'm just going to grab something here. Whether it be this, you know, because what goes into making this, and then also the end of life, it's made with certain types of materials. What is the exact amount that it will cost our conversion network to turn that into something valuable? Not or not maybe this specifically, but the amount of materials that are going into this. And we did that because we realized that with waste, it's usually small scale and decentralized that has the highest impact and actually the best economic return. But it's still not what is usually funded, because people who are funding infrastructure development, they're looking at, it's like 10 million euros is too small of a project. They're looking in hundreds of millions. Like those are their tickets. Mm-hmm. And that's just not what is actually needed, which is kind of ironic. Or it's not needed in a very large part of the world that doesn't have it. Yeah. And so this is what actually helps us to fund the proofs of concepts and the initial market entry of these technologies into an area. And then after that, they become self-funding, because that's the other part when we do our assessments, is we have to ensure that the technology won't continuously need investment from us, because we want to be funding the next offset.
Of course.
It actually has to do also with whenever you're working in offsets, you have to consider something called, I think it's additionality, like that your offset isn't paying for something that would be happening already. Yeah, just to guarantee that the credibility of it, the transparency and the credibility of our credit system, if we are just kind of like keep feeding one project, it's not actually.
Right.
So, sorry for the super technical stuff, but.
But I think there's some very, what's awesome is that we now have this technology and then, of course, a bunch of leadership that is recognizing that we can leverage all of these assets and knowledge graphs and all of these inputs to be able to come up with some awesome solutions, some elegant solutions that are very specific to countries and regions. So I'm thrilled by this, and I think a lot of the judges were too. Just to take a moment to talk about your team, I noticed a few of them had the same last name.
So, yes, this is a, whether it's like a family company or a family dream, it was started by myself, my brother, and my sister. Uh-huh. And we have very different backgrounds. My brother's a marine biologist. He's been working in both marine restoration, focusing around coral reefs and island communities, and then into sustainable fisheries. And he's actually part of the reason why we have been aware of like the ocean's plastic crisis for quite some time before it ever really entered our news feeds. My brother would send us photos from like beaches in Sulawesi where nobody lives. And it is literally kilometers where like half a meter, like you're up to your knee in plastic. And the interesting thing is like literally nobody lives there. So this was the part of the inspiration of what we're doing is like, well, what if we can make these people, because at the same time he was trying to encourage these community, like these fishermen communities to engage in sustainable fisheries. So the farming of highly sought after kind of endangered fish, so that way they wouldn't be taking pressure off the wild stock, or they would take the pressure off the wild stock.
I see.
And it's like, well, what if we could get these people to become fishers of plastic? Because when we can put a dollar, like essentially the really interesting thing is the fuel that comes from like waste-derived fuel, so plastic-derived fuel, is actually cleaner and has less, it's better quality diesel than the stuff that they're, that is like crude, because it's already been refined. Yeah. And so basically what's just floating on there, like an oil, is oil. And when we can empower these communities to get the technology, to invest in the technology through the offset, they can be, they're able to collect waste, and we can pay them per kilo that they bring to us. And it's like increasing the livelihood and basically taking pressure off of non-renewable resources.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's an elegant solution. So this was your brother who was seeing this.
Yeah, so that
this.
Was now, my Yeah, my sister, her background is in political science and international law. And then myself, I came from the tech side. I worked in mobile app development and different areas of ICT for the past 10 years. Mostly, I worked a lot in social media for many years. So that was very interesting about learning human behavior.
Yeah.
How to motivate people, like on getting people in. That's actually what inspired me. A lot of people say that change happens slowly, but if you work in basically consumer apps, you realize that actually behavior changes very fast.
Yeah.
If you work in gaming, behavior you can teach people huge amounts of information in an extremely short period of time if you have the right motivation. That's the whole the whole premise behind gamification. It's very, very powerful. Like, you can teach people universes. Ask any of these like kind of complex games. The amount of information that's in there is like in a university education. if you look at the actual content. And that's what really inspired me to kind of combine these tools that are used to kind of facilitate behavioral change in a way that doesn't require the normal decades. Because everyone said, oh, when you're going to places like Indonesia, it's going to require so much time and education, like years before you can make people understand. It's like, well, no, you just need the right tool to deliver it to them, and you can change behavior very fast.
Yeah. No, that's a perfect storm of conversion to a whole new, it really is, between the three of you. So it's so awesome that somehow this happened under the same roof of a family. I mean, it really is remarkable. Was it about your parents' ethics what is it that at least offered all three of you an element in however you're navigating your lives to navigate it towards global solutions?
Yeah, I think that definitely our upbringing had a lot to do with it. It's like, I have to thank both of my parents in very different ways. Mum's Canadian, dad's Finnish. Mm-hmm. But we grew up on the west coast of BC.
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
like Vancouver uh-huh. Island.
Uh-huh.
And obviously being very surrounded by extremely beautiful nature. But then with things like, you know, clear cutting and logging. So when there's that stark contrast. And then we also, when I was very young, we drove down to Belize I was actually born near Ontario, but we drove down to Belize and we lived and traveled around the Caribbean for like a little over a year. Oh. So we had, quite young in the developmental years, exposure to island communities. I think that really affected my brother really strongly because, he's been living in Indonesia for almost 15 years.
Made an impression.
Yes, exactly. But then I have to give credit where credit's due and thank the Finnish government or the Finnish society? Like, I always say that Finland environmental isn't necessarily like having this kind of sustainability attitude is almost something that is just ingrained in you. People just have it. I think, I don't know if it's because it's quite a raw nature country where with a small population. But then same thing, people yet have a very engineering mindset, a social system that gave us the opportunities. So it wasn't just like everybody in Finland can get a very good education, like higher education. So we all went to university there. So it provided us with the tools that we needed. And then it's kind of like also the village, so you can get connected to people, and it happens to be one of the centers, or like a global leader, even though it's a small country, in both network development, so certain aspects of technology, gaming, things like that, you know, Nokia and its legacy. Right. And then much less known is the, like globally, is the clean tech. So the Finland, when it turned 100, its gift to the world was something called the World Circular Economic Forum. And so it, like, this is something that Finland has really been putting, as a nation, putting towards, like, putting forward. So, yeah, I think, like you said, a perfect storm of different things which fit together.
Yeah, truly.
Wow. Great conversation. We're going to hit pause for just a moment and share a couple things from our sponsors who make this all possible. We'll get right back. Our Watch Pitch podcast would not be possible without our sponsors. So, to name just a few at the moment, Techstars. Techstars is the worldwide network that helps entrepreneurs succeed, with over 4,000 live events that are coming back soon in over 150 countries. Techstar alumni clock in at over 300,000 participants. And from Palo Alto Software, LivePlan. It's the world's leading business plan software built for entrepreneurs like you. Pitch, plan, and track your business anywhere with over 500,000 small business customers. Now, let's get back to our podcast episode.
Speaking of connections, since we are starting to take our masks off, we are starting to travel again. There's, again, certain parts of the world that are really still suffering and in the thick of it at the moment. But we are seeing a thaw. I'm wondering, in that spirit of connection in relationship to your business, how this post-pandemic cycle, and it won't be a new, we're not going back to normal, but there will be some form of a new normal. How do you see that impacting your business and the initiatives that you're taking? Do you see an impact at all, or do you feel like maybe there'll be more traction now that you'll be able to travel more, or do you really feel like, you know, this isn't really?
Well, I think that it's definitely, I said we've experienced, if anything, we had like a growth.
You did.
During the COVID period. Yeah, there, I don't know if it was because companies, while they were halted, they were thinking about what could they do to do differently once stuff started moving again. It gave the individuals this time to reflect, because they were less, in a way, able to like look, be entertained in their own lives. It did force them to look outside at like what is happening. So yeah. We've had, there's just been a lot more interest in like waste offsets. It was very interesting, right? When we were like launching our first fashion brands, it was basically like the week before I had read an article in Vogue Business about like plastics offsets being the new carbon offset. And so it was just this, again, these beautiful synchronicities. And another one of the first sectors that we're really targeting for the offset is the tourism sector. Because most people don't know this, but 14% of the world's municipal solid waste is produced by the tourism industry. So it's huge.
It's a big number.
And
it's a really big number.
We've had a lot of these companies, and maybe it's because what we can offer them, it's like a way to do something different that's very easy. They don't have to put any money up front. It's just like, but they can come back to business with something different, saying that it's like, okay, well, actually now we're working towards being waste neutral. And being able to offer these kind of like win-wins, people want whatever type of hope they can get. And if you're offering them like a message of, we can do better this time, but in a really like positive way, as opposed to a like guilt and shaming type of way, like just right, kind of really right, honestly right. saying mm-hmm. we're all part of this. We all contributed to it. It's no one's, I like to use the term, it's no one's fault, but it's everyone's responsibility.
Right.
And
right.
that I think is like the best to give people that opportunity to be, to it's take so responsibility true. In a way that is easy for them. And so we've had a lot of positive development, and we're hoping that we can use this time that, like, when people do start traveling again and they come to new places, they can do it with like fresh eyes in appreciation. Exactly. And mm-hmm.
And maybe,
but I mean, there's
a new set of values too, like an
exactly.
awareness. Yes, right. And a set of values that now are sort of built into that thinking. But it is an onboarding process. There is an education involved, absolutely. Well, being a founder of an organization and having an amazing team that you've known all your life, I'm curious, when navigating, say, the next 3 months post-COVID, and then maybe looking at the next 3 quarters, what's on your horizon? What are you looking at in these next 3 months and next 3 quarters?
Well, as startups do, we're all, like, fundraising is always the big thing.
Sure is.
We were lucky to get a government grant before, like, as COVID was happening, that got us mm-hmm. kind of through. And mm-hmm. then now we have gotten some good customer traction. So, but yeah, that is what we're looking at. But actually, we are now highly considering bringing some projects to Europe as well. We're looking not just in the conversion projects in Southeast Asia, but also mm-hmm. because there's a lot of European, like, resilience and recovery packages coming in. And
right.
So mm-hmm. looking to kind of tap into that and get into, there's a lot of regulatory reform also coming in that's very supportive for us in terms of mm-hmm. like policies against waste. So it's like what we're offering companies now to do, they're going to be required to do in the coming
right.
years. It's going to become yeah. a legal obligation. Mm-hmm. And so helping mm-hmm. people kind of get ahead of that curve mm-hmm. is really what we're focusing on, and getting these first kind of cases. Like, we are very exciting. It just is happening tomorrow. One of the waste to energy pilot projects is breaking ground and showcasing at a science park in an island in Indonesia. So it's going to be really kind of getting the traction around there. We're launching mm-hmm.
excellent
offsets with a couple of major brands. So then it's just kind of using these to, again,
use cases where it's working.
Like, yeah, exactly. To mm-hmm. understand, we realized that the tourism sector has, like, a lot of potential for us. So kind of just, like, focusing and tweaking the product and the assessment. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, raising funding, right. getting more customers. We have, and not just getting more customers, because the one major aspect of news cycle is not just like the waste, getting the waste out of the environment. It is the production of the new materials.
Right.
So
right.
This is also very exciting. And so then whenever mm-hmm. we've done the assessments for our customers, we actually can understand at what point can they start integrating these new materials that we're producing mm-hmm. into their production to replace the non-renewable materials that they're using right now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of
huge.
Carrying out these, like, second parts of assessments. We have some really mm-hmm. interesting conversion partners that are taking agricultural waste to make compostable plastics. Mm-hmm. So seeing if we can look at our fashion brands and being like, where in the timeline could you be replacing your garment bags with something that is compostable, as opposed to, so that way it's not just, there's been a lot of, like, criticism in the carbon offset sector, and just also the polluters pay principle, that like offsets are just a Band-Aid solution. And what we want to do is, like, we're both stopping the bleeding and cleaning the infection and then doing the rehabilitation. So
right.
we want to really showcase that we're also taking the steps that there's not going to be waste tomorrow through the integration of these new materials.
Right. Huge. Yeah. I what I'm particularly inspired by, not only the mission and what you're focusing on, but what you've learned along the way to expedite this onboarding of new thinking and new behavior, and doing it at an entrepreneurial scale, because it, you know, the number of forces that you're able to kind of capture in your enterprise and then be able to offer value is something, at least at scale, that maybe a think tank would be working on, or maybe a subsidized, you know, nonprofit, or perhaps some visionary element in a government. But you're a company. You're an entrepreneurial company that is bringing massive value to these really big conversations. And I mean, I'm not aware. I don't know that you have any competition, but I mean, do you? Do you see that as a company, you have competitors in this space? Or I mean, because I really do feel like you are bringing together some enormously huge benefits to the planet, and to be suggesting that you're doing that at an entrepreneurial level is really impressive. Just want to say that out loud. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, there are other companies doing offset, and it's like, if there wasn't, it would mean that we were too early, like as a small company. Do you know what I mean? Like we've been doing it for a long time. And as we first started out, like as Nusa Centara, before we built NewCycle, we built the offset because we understood that it was an evolution of what is coming. But when we first started talking about it, it was just like,
yeah, I can imagine.
So you kind of, we had to do environmental consulting and development work in order to kind of keep ourselves going while the market, the industry, the technology, the awareness, the collective awareness evolved enough to be ready for it is. And as I have a history of working in startups, and it's not always just about your technology. It's your timing. It's your story. There's so many things. You do have to wait for that time. We're really lucky now. We feel that now is the time. But to your point of what you mentioned, we absolutely understand that this is not a problem that can be solved by a single company. Right. It cannot be solved by a single country. And we are not in any way egotistical to think that we're going to be ones doing it. We want to be the ones doing part of it and encouraging others to come. So it's like, we actually encourage competition. I always say it's like if I give a talk, there is more than enough garbage for everyone. Like, please,
it's true.
Please join us. And I think maybe that's also being inspired by the type of technology that was developed out of Finland. It's like Linus Torvald in developing like open source Linux. You can develop very successful technology and have successful businesses while creating models that other companies can scale with and creating technologies that other. So this is the whole idea also about the our use and the semantic AI that we're building. There's going to be part that is our secret sauce, that is our IP, but we're also looking to interface. And it was one of the great things that actually came out of the Knowledge Graph conference. I was also asked to speak on a panel about sustainability modeling. And we've decided to continue to kind of have a little working group that meets like every couple of weeks to kind of keep talking about what we're doing. And it's amazing. And I feel very humbled to be a part of the discussion with people who are who've been building knowledge graphs and kind of were pioneers in like actually building this technology from scratch. We have people that professors from different European universities, companies like McKinsey, who are all participating in this discussion. So we absolutely want our piece of the technology, our NewCilium, to interface with what the collective think tanks are doing, getting involved. And it's like, what is the data being produced by the Ellen MacArthur Foundation? Or like I said, the World World Bank database on waste. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How are we interfacing? How are we either proposing problems to them? Because sometimes it's actually, in order to solve something, you need a well-formulated problem. And like putting this stuff out there and being like, hey, have you guys thought about it like this? Or then looking at all of the things that different people are doing and then being like, well, have you thought about it, solving it this way? And just really having that kind of dialogue with either directly through the things like the working group or just going to conferences and just seeing what people are doing. There's a guy who always inspires me. He was a futurist from, I don't know, I guess maybe turn of the century, Buckminster Fuller.
Oh, sure. Bucky Fuller. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like we need these more like kind of grand generalists. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think that I often look to nature in order to inspire the technology that we're building or that I'm trying to tell our engineers to build because I'm not an engineer. But then I tell them, I'm like, and that's why it is called Mycelium. I'm like, don't you see? And I make them all watch the Fantastic Fungi documentary being like, do you see the role that the mushrooms have, the mycelial network has in nature and what it does? It moves food around. It moves information. It's basically like the internet of soil between plants. Yeah. Like we're not trying to be each the individual plant or the trees. That's what I see the conversion partners, the offsets. We're the mycelium that connects them together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's many species of mushrooms, and it's like we hope that more come.
Right, right. So true. So true. Well, I'm a big believer of nature guiding this our decision making. I mean, they did that without a organizational plan. Everything seems to be with huge amounts of biodiversity because of those networks. And I feel we have a lot to learn, from that model. So I think I know you're onto something. And I think the more that those conversations can happen as we are facing things that are really at a crisis level, whether it's how we're managing our waste or how we're managing disease, I think we do really have to come up with better approaches. So hats off to the work that you're doing and to being a lighthouse in this mix of ideas that need to be circulating in order to create innovation. And so, thank you for that. I guess I'd love to just ask you in closing, if there's anything else you might like to say to fellow startup founders who may be also wanting to tackle some really big ideas that are important ideas for this time and how to balance what I think is often a struggle between wanting to champion your passion with something that's going to have global impacts and at the same time, needing to address boots on the ground realities. I know it's a big question, but I'm sure that you probably, with the perspectives that you have both experienced and have, that you might be able to offer something valuable to the listeners and viewers.
I've been in like the very traditional type of startup where that's been like some of the really big hurdles that we've faced. It's like talking to investors. They want you to be building a product that's doing one thing that like, it's almost like the machine learning versus knowledge graphs. It's like they want that one algorithm and you to master that. But when solving a problem like the waste management issue, part of the reason why nobody's solving it is because nobody's building that connects these things together. And so we've really had to go against the collective belief systems of how you should build a company, what type of like business model do you need to have. And so to sometimes have faith in what you're doing and to be doing it differently. But at the same time, realize that it's like you can't do everything. And to look at the part that the role that you're playing, it's like we realize we are trying to be the new psyllium and not the trees. And so do kind of understand your role, but don't have the courage to be very different. And it's like if you are being if the traditional like business or like financing models don't work for you, then have the courage to try to find other ones that work. Because that was, sometimes it is those, the financing models, the ways of investment, even the infrastructure model itself, that's part of the problem, and have the courage to challenge that. And also have the courage to like break down the silos between industries, because sometimes your solution will come, will be blaringly obvious if you just look at another industry will have done it perfectly. And you can take that model, they call them like fractals, and you can take that fractal and if just a little bit of tweaking, you can actually apply it and you can have solved a lot of the challenges that you're facing with very little effort. But it requires that perspective to look outside of your business, and which is again why observing nature can be so helpful.
Exactly. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the value and the heartfulness and the vision that you and your team and your partners are demonstrating. And I do hope this has been valuable for you, but most especially for our WatchFish podcast listeners and our YouTube channel viewers.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here. And it's very refreshing being able to be asked the type of questions that you're asking, because it allows me to answer in ways that I'm not usually able to, because sometimes to give gives the right answer, you have to be asked the right questions. So,
right. Yes.
Yeah, well, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you again.
This conversation with Sabrina was so inspired on so many fronts. The nature of her business, mission, and values is what moved the judges at the Knowledge Graph Pitch Competition to place her as runner-up. I am so grateful for her time and to her parents for raising a family who have embraced AI and knowledge graphs to connect and support solving global issues like waste management. Looking forward to her progress and Nusa Centara's implementation of solutions that are relevant to everyone. We are indeed on a threshold, a restart and new beginning, looking forward against a challenging past, but a future with new opportunities to embrace. Thanks for joining me, Trey Scott, and our guest, Sabrina Vitasari from Nusa Centara, for Season 5, Episode 3 of the WatchPitch Podcast and YouTube channel. Thank you for listening to our WatchPitch Podcast. Please give us an awesome review in the iTunes Store, on Stitcher, or wherever you downloaded the WatchPitch Podcast. We appreciate your appreciation. There are also some other great past interviews, so take a look at the library and see what we have. And by all means, subscribe and don't miss out on our next inspired conversation. We can also be found and welcome your following on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And once again, if you need or want personalized coaching for your next upcoming pitch, email us direct at podcast@watchpitch.com. Lots of tips and support to get started or polish your next pitch. Thanks again for visiting and listening to now your Watch Pitch Podcast.